He turns. He fires for the win. He's got the bucket at the buzzer.
Weber back to Bibby. Has the open shot.
Ladies and gentlemen, up on those feet. Put those hands together. And we'll meet tonight starting five for your Sacramento Kings.
Welcome to the Kings Beat podcast. I am James Hamm, Kings Insider for ESPN 1320 and the Kings Beat. Joining me today, we promised you interviews. We have Kings legend Jerry Reynolds. Jerry, what's going on?
Well, not much. You know, definitely retirement's retirement. And, you know, just looking forward to sporting events later today. I love to watch golf. And, of course, the playoffs, that's the most important thing. You know, finally, the finals are here. You know, as you know, the NBA goes on forever, as seems like every other sport does, too. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I thought about, you know, March Madness now actually is in April. And, and I'm old enough to remember when the NBA Finals finished up in April. So that, you know, it's, you know, but it's the way it is. And TV controls so much. But it should be a great series. I'm just hopeful that Mike Malone and Denver can win it all.
Yeah, let's start there because I think, you know, we have some unfinished business with Michael Malone here in Sacramento. And I think everyone in Sacramento is pulling for Denver to beat the Heat just because, you know, he's such a likable guy. He's such a, well, he's a curmudgeon, but he's likable at the same time. Just how happy are you to see him make it to the finals, and especially with the type of team he has?
Yeah, well, extremely. You know, I mean, I've enjoyed watching them all year a lot, obviously, Michael and his coaching ability, but, you know, Jokic and just their unselfish style of play. They you know, and they've been the best team in the West all year now. So, I mean, I really did think most of the power was in the East. And, of course, that's why this should be an interesting series, is because Miami, for some reason, was able to beat all the powers in the East.
Yeah, I thought it was strange, too. Like, I assumed that it would be whoever won the East would win the finals. I don't feel that way anymore. And I didn't.
No,
feel
I, that, yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah, it's a new thing. I mean, I really think Denver's the better team. Mm-hmm. But I'm concerned about the long layoff, you know. I think tonight's game will be an extremely important game. I mean, Denver just has to get it because that's Miami's kind of mode there. They've went into Milwaukee and they went into Boston to get those first wins on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. They seem to have figured out something. And, you know, on the other side, Eric Spoelstra, is he one of the most underappreciated great coaches that we've seen? Because it sure does seem like he's just a magician.
That's a great point. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've got to put him among the elite of all time. You know, I mean, the championships he's won, just like, I think this year, probably people have started to appreciate just what a great coach he is. Mm-hmm. Because clearly the talent base, nobody saw this coming. You know, the undrafted players and, you know, obviously the whole Miami organization is just top flight, as I think starts with Pat Riley. But Eric Spoelstra is a Hall of Fame coach, and I think everyone knows that now.
Yeah, I think so, too. They've just been wonderful to watch. And they have this thing where, you know, it's not the stars that are winning games for them. They, you know, Jimmy Butler won some games early in the playoffs, but it feels like they're one of those teams that they just have a bunch of random guys who come in and put up big numbers. So Caleb Martin is the latest to kind of step up and be that guy. But that's what the NBA playoffs can be about. It's about, you know, finding that extra guy that can put you over the top that you didn't expect, that the other team didn't expect, that really takes advantage of whether it's matchups or situation stuff. And I think the Heat are uniquely ready for that because they have a bunch of random players that, you know, even a guy like Gabe Vincent, local kid from here, you know, all of a sudden is thrust into like major role and coming up big for a team. So kind of an interesting way they've built that squad.
Yeah. And really, when you think about, you know, it's the start of the year, who would have thought Gabe Vincent was going to be far more important than Kyle Lowry?
Yeah.
To the team. I mean, obviously Kyle's had a great career, but it's winding down. And then, you know, Tyler Hero gets hurt, maybe their second best player. And Duncan Robinson, who hadn't really played in 2 years, just steps right in and actually shoots the ball better than Tyler did. Maybe not quite the complete player, you know. And then, of course, you know, Caleb Martin, I mean, my goodness, let go by Charlotte. And really, I thought he was the MVP of the Eastern Championship Series, even over Jimmy. I mean, Jimmy's clearly the better player, but, you know, Jimmy had a couple of bad games. Caleb had no bad games.
Yeah, and he brings it on both ends of the court. He's a Swiss Army knife. I told everybody last summer, just go get a Martin twin. I don't care which one. Yes. Just go get one of them.
I agree with you. You're not going to get Caleb, but, you know, maybe you can get the other one in Charlotte, because right now you'd say, boy, the bloodlines look pretty good.
Yeah. Cody Martin, he was injured most of the season, but, you know, both of them were free agents last year. And it was like, man, that's the type of player the Kings need. Mm-hmm. Let's transition to that. The Kings finally made it. They finally broke the curse. Just how much joy did you get watching this season and seeing a team come together that, you know, I don't think anyone expected. What odds makers had them at 33.5, 34 wins. But for them to come in and just really take the league by storm and be one of the most fun and complete teams in the league all season long.
Really was. I can't think of a year where I've enjoyed this any team anymore. I'd have to go back to the 98-99 lockout season when the Kings actually turned it around at that point, you know, with Vlade and Weber and Jay Will. You know, that team wasn't a finished product like this team isn't a finished product, but they came out of nowhere and were so much fun to watch every night. Even the losses were fun. And I thought that way about this team. I like I say, it's been a long time since I couldn't wait for a game to start. You know, I'd be in my recliner early and ready. And, you know, just the unselfishness of the team, the, you know, it's just remarkable. And of course, obviously great coaching, just a true highlight.
Yeah. And you talk about the great coaching. Did you expect this from Mike Brown? Because I mean, Mike Brown is, I don't want to call him a true retread by NBA standards. But maybe like he's a guy who hadn't been head coach in 6 or 7 years, you know, had done great things in Cleveland, but with LeBron, had Kobe for a year and that didn't work out, went back to Cleveland for a year. That didn't work out. But did you expect him to be able to sort of capture the imagination of the team like he did this season?
No. You know, I really thought it was a good hire. I thought, you know, he's a professional coach, you know, just, I didn't know Mike, but I know a lot of people who do very well, and nobody, everybody spoke highly of him, you know, as a coach and even more so as a person. So I thought it would, you know, definitely have a chance of working out, but certainly didn't think that what we saw we'd get. And, you know, obviously credit to a lot of people. I mean, the roster was much improved by Monty McNair, but I think the only thing is, like say, a coach can do once he's got the roster is motivate it and utilize it correctly. And I don't know of a coach who did better than that. You know, I mean, we might talk about Spoelstra now or something in the same vein of utilizing what talent's there. But Mike, I just think certainly deserving of coach of the year, and, you know, probably got 6-7 more wins at least out of his team. You know, even once you saw the talent base was a little better than most people. But yeah, I can't think of a, you know, any coach in Sacramento Kings history that has done a good job in 1 year. I mean, that even includes Rick Adelman, who I think truly is a Hall of Famer and proven to be.
Yeah, I totally agree. We had this discussion on the radio. I was on with D'Lo and KC. I think it was last week, the week before. And we looked at the Heat. And I asked the question, is a combo of Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler better than the combo of Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox? And I don't know. Like the twosome, you know, I think it's an interesting question, right? And if that's who you're building around, how far away are the Kings?
Yeah, I think it'd be tough if I were a front office person to make the trade even up for those two. Of course, a lot of us due to age with Jimmy. Of course, Fox has got all his best years ahead. And I think Domas can stay where he is at least for a lot of years. And Jimmy, you know, Jimmy's not on the downslide by any means, but you're talking about a couple of top years probably left. Mm-hmm. It's a great point. I mean, I think that's what you need to look at when you look at top teams. And I think that's why Denver is where they are, obviously, with Jokic and Jamal Murray. Really, that's about as good a duo as there is, that's for sure. And, of course, Jamal, I mean, most of the early part of the season, he wasn't anywhere near where he is now, but he is more than back 100%. So, yeah, if you're the Kings, and I think they know, I mean, to me, it's not a finished product. It's a work in progress. You've got two proven guys that you can build around, and you've got some good players here already. But it's also true, if you want to win the West or contend, you really just don't have enough talent, in my opinion. I mean, I think it's much like that 98-99 team that surprised everybody and made the playoffs. But people forget. I don't, because I'm old. But I remember who started on that team. And Page was a rookie, but he didn't start. Corliss Williamson did. And you had Lottie and Chris, Jason Williams, and Olivier Saint-Jean.
Yeah, Tariq Abdul-Wahed. Olivier Saint-Jean.
Tariq Abdul-Wahed. And, you know, obviously there were some, you know, the years went by, there's some mistakes made, the Nick Anderson kind of thing, but obviously then the trades to, once it was clear, I mean, Jeff knew right away that the future was Pages, so the Corliss Williamson trade brought you Doug Christie, and then later Jay Will, you know, once you see Christie could run a club, then Jay Will became expendable for Mike Bibby. And, you know, and that's the kind of thing I think the Kings have got to do. They've got some real assets now, including Veznikov, that maybe they can get the piece, you know, they need or two, you know, which I think probably they're you know, everybody, like we all would just love to say, oh, just run it back like it is. And I think you could, and you'd be a playoff team, but I don't know why you'd think that you're going to beat Denver or some of the other teams for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting because the way the team is constructed right now, I agree with you. I think they are missing, it's probably two really good pieces that puts them over the top. I mean, you need length and athleticism that this team doesn't have right now, which is why their defensive limitations are there. And, you know, they need a backup center. They need a 3-4. They might need 2 3-4s. They might even need a big point guard to back up De'Aaron Fox. I think that there are all kinds of ways that this team can improve. Do you think that, how would you attack this summer? What would be your priority if you were running this squad?
Well, I'm like you. I mean, I see, you know, kind of the two needs like you do. They need more length, and certainly be nice to have a backup guard, if not point guard, lead guard that has length and size. Mm-hmm. In my mind, they could get by with, because of Sabonis, they could get by with, you know, just a really good guard that can, it's got some handle, because Domas is going to run the offense a lot. So, but, you know, I mean, just using an example here, I know he's not available, but Derek White, let's say, you know, a guy that can score, can handle, can defend a couple positions, has been there or done that, that type thing. And then I'm more in the mode of the Kings really need a 4-5, a guy who could play with Sabonis and behind Sabonis. And of course, I've got a favorite, have had for a number of, for a long time, and that's Naz Reid.
Yep.
Who, if, I mean, I think he can shoot the three. He's athletic. He's tough. He got a little mean streak. I don't know enough about him, you know, coachability and all that stuff. So that might be, he might not be the right guy, but I'm saying that type of guy who, you know, can stretch the floor. And then see, in my mind, I think your backup 3-4 should be Harrison Barnes going forward. And Keegan Murray becomes your starting three. I think that's his going to be his position, needs to be going forward for him to be, you know, the player that he could be. And then I think Harrison really at his age and his skill, which is still there, and he's really good and good guy. I think he could give you really that consistent backup guy at a couple of spots, you know, when you're playing going small ball or whatever. So to me, if you could do some of those kind of things, I think the team, you could say the team is going to be better and maybe have a better chance of moving forward.
Okay. So lots to unpack there. So I'm going to start with this. Like coming into the league, like I looked at Keegan as a more of a four than a three, like a four that can play three, not a three that can play four. As his career is going to develop here, do you think there's a possibility you can make the full shift with him to the three? Do you think he can hang up, can hold up at the three full time going forward?
I do. I mean, I think it's certainly going to be a progress. I mean, you know, if you'd asked me that early in the year, I'd have said no. But the wonderful thing about Keegan is it seems like every situation he's put in, he adjusts pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously his shooting is there already. You know, he's got to be, and he's a good enough rebounder for a three. I don't know that he's ever going to be a consistently good enough rebounder for four on a championship caliber kind of team. And I think defensively he's got a chance. His length, he has good instincts, getting better, getting tougher. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, basically with him, it's a matter of adjusting to playing, you know, off the dribble a little bit more, developing, you know, the floaters, the mid-range game a little more. But it sure seems like that the progress he made during the season was really remarkable. And I don't know why he couldn't make, you know, won't make another step. And you know, at his length and size, if he could do that, he could be one of the real elite small forwards in the league.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the Kings are kind of at an impasse with him. What do you do this summer? Because this is the super important summer for him. Do you bulk him up to withstand some of the bigger fours, or do you lean him down, really work on strength and agility, work on lateral quickness? Like those are things where, I mean, he should be doing that stuff either way, but you don't want to bulk a guy up if he's going to slide over and play predominantly at the three. So I'm intrigued to see what he does. And I think the Kings' mindset on him has changed as well. They believe that like there's a shot he can stick at the three. And if he can, I think it changes everything for the franchise. Like moving forward, it really does give them that one piece. I think it's easier to find the Naz Reids or the Sasha Vezenkovs. It's easier to find like pieces that will work, even a Trey Lyles at the four, than it is at the three. Although I still think, you know, having shooters at the four is one of the most important things in the modern NBA game. It's something that Dave Yeager complained about all the time. Can you just get me a stretch four? Like, I don't care who it is. Can you go get me a stretch four? And I think they delivered him like Anthony Tolliver. But even when you put Anthony Tolliver at the four, the offense worked better. And so I think it's something that you're going to have to wait and see as far as whether Keegan can stick there long term. And you brought up the Harrison Barnes thing. How much did your perspective of Harrison Barnes change? Like, I mean, at the beginning of the season, he looked pretty close to done. And then all of a sudden he has this sort of recovery and was pretty phenomenal. He played 82 games, averaged 15 points a game. His 3-point stroke came back. You know, he's always been a great locker room guy, community guy, all that stuff. But you get to the playoffs and you saw how, like, again, I don't want to bemoan this point, but one shot, if he would have beat that, if he would have hit that shot in what, game four, and they would have gone up 3-1, I think our perspective of what Harrison Barnes is on this team moving forward might have been a little different. He misses a shot, and I don't want to blame him. I mean, shots, you make shots, you miss shots, that happens. But the way that he barely played in game six and game seven, I just thought it really, it changed the perspective of him, and maybe changed the perspective of him as a free agent and moving forward with this team.
Yeah, I think a little bit. You know, I thought he had a really good year. Obviously, he played every game, guy that was always ready. And that's why I guess my stance on him is that I wouldn't want to lose him. I mean, obviously, there's a price you're not going to pay. But I think he has a lot of value, you know, on the court, off the court. And I see it more going forward as a key reserve, you know, 3-4 kind of guy. And I think he would be a great mentor, which he always has been to anybody. Mm-hmm. So you know, and there again, he's still an asset. And this is a team that you can't get better by losing assets for nothing. So if you have to overpay a little bit to keep him, I would certainly do that. I don't know what the overpay number is, because Harrison does have value in the league. I'm very sure of that. And so, you know, that's usually a good model. You know, I mean, I always go back to Bogey a little bit, had, to my mind, had clearly more value in the league than Buddy did. And, you know, if you'd been able to move Buddy by himself and then kept Bogey, and then later you could have always moved Bogey, like you still could if you're Atlanta. So, you know, it's assets. And I think that's what Veznikov is too. I mean, he may be the player you need, but he's a player that the league knows is a good NBA prospect. And so, you know, so that's all good. And that's a credit to Monty and his staff. And so, you know, at the end of it, I'd like to see him keep the guys they've got for the most part, unless you can make a trade for something you know is better. Mm-hmm. But try to get somebody else's free agent and not lose an asset in doing it necessarily. I mean, probably you could feel comfortable trading Rashawn Holmes now, since he just doesn't have a role for one reason or another. But I think I know he could help teams. If you could move him, and whether it's sign and trade or something, that's different. So a lot of ways to go about it, but I agree with you. I mean, they need more athleticism, more length, and you can never have too much shooting. And that's why I do like Veznikov. I mean, he's a big time shooter. I don't know that he's a four. I'm not sure he's going to rebound well enough, but that's, you know, that remains, you know, and he is who he is at his age. You're going to get who you get.
Yeah. I think the thing about him that I like is the shooting is incredible. Like he has a quick release. In the NBA game, he'll have more space than he does in the European game. He's smart. He doesn't make a bunch of mistakes. I like him. Like, he's a really nice back cut guy. I think he'll play really, really well with Domas. I think he's like almost a perfect fit, except for the fact that I don't think he's a quality enough where I would put him as a starting four on a playoff team. And that's going to be a problem. And so I don't know how you get around that, but you're right. You can't have too much shooting. But I'll also make the argument that if you come back this season and your 3-4 combo, your set is Keegan Murray and Harrison Barnes and Sasha Vezenkov and Trey Lyles, I don't think you're long enough. I don't think you're athletic enough. I don't think you're quick enough. And I think you're going to have problems. And so, like, I would like to see how they balance all of that, because I still think Trey Lyles is a really, really solid NBA player that can help a team. I think he can play some small ball five. I think you might be okay with him being a, like, your key backup five for a good portion of the season behind Domas. But like, you still have to find a way to not only bring in longer athletic players, but fit them into the rotation. You know, it's one thing to bring in a bunch of guys like Kessler Edwards that, you know, don't play that much. It's a whole nother thing when you need that player to play 20, 30 minutes a game to improve your defensive acumen. And so I still think like the roster construction is pretty interesting right now. We're at like a little bit of an impasse where, again, if you're going to bring Vezenkov over, like how do you improve the roster the rest of the way? Does that mean no more Trey Lyles? Does that mean no more Harrison Barnes? And can you bring in a guy like Naz Reid who might be a difference maker for your team? So, yeah, I think it's interesting, right?
Yeah, it is. And I agree with everything you said. I like Vezenkov, but I'm like you. It's like, I'm not sure that he'll be better than Trey Lyles.
I'm not either.
At all. And so, you know, so it'd be one of those things where so all of a sudden now you're just taking minutes from one to give to another guy that may be a slightly better shooter, but not near as good a player. Yeah. and rebound and all that. So, you know, that would be my issue too. I mean, you're doubling up kind of. It's kind of like Monk and Herter. I mean, obviously Monk, I think overall had the certainly much better playoff, but, I'm not sure either one. I mean, I think Monk's perfect in what he's doing, whether Herter is or not going forward, and he's really good, but you need somebody of that size probably that's better defensively and maybe a little more of a natural handle. That makes sense.
No, that makes sense. Like, I think the Kings have a lot of decisions to make both short-term and long-term. And, you know, most of the decisions that they're going to have to make here, like Harrison and Trey are the two guys that you're concerned with, whether they're going to be back or not. But I think we talked about, I think Sasha is at Trey's level, right around mm-hmm. that level. And mm-hmm. then you losing Harrison Barnes for nothing would be, I don't want to say catastrophic, but it would be tough. You don't really have players like him. He is a step above, you know, these other players that we're talking about as far as Lyles or Sasha. Like, I just think he's a better overall player. He's more durable. He's a guy who does more on the court. And so you still have to find ways to replace that piece if he leaves. And you can't do it with, you know, three guys that might play 10 minutes each. You got to have real NBA talent at that position. But I also, I would say, like, when I look around the league, having a guy like Sasha, I don't see that much of a difference between Sasha and, like Davis Bertans. And Bertans is out there making like 17 to 18 million bucks a year. And I think you'll be able to get Vezenkov for more like the $4 to $5 million a year. And so I think there's really good value in what they're doing with him, if they can get him to come overseas.
Yeah, I agree there. And I mean, I think he's a much better prospect than Bertans. I mean, I don't know that he's a better shooter, but he's got more game to him, that's for sure. But it is one of those things to where if you lose a Harrison Barnes or a Trey Lyles and you keep Vezenkov, I don't think you got better.
Yeah, it's interesting. If nothing else, I think you're probably even, but you didn't get better. So I think what is the term that Monty likes to use? Maintain and improve. Which I think is interesting. I want to bring up something when it comes to Sasha. Like you were a GM, you were a head coach. Like, have you went through these situations where you were trying to recruit players that you had drafted overseas and you're trying to get them to come over and join your team? What is that process like, you know, whether it was Rodriguez or whether it was Peja, or, you know, you're still part of the front office when they're bringing Hedo over? Like, how difficult is that to get a player to try to realize his dreams at the NBA level when he's already looked at as a star in the European game?
Well, in some case, if they're young enough, it's really not that hard. I think with Peja, he was under contract and couldn't get him for a year and had a serious injury as well. Hedo was ready.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I think with the younger guys, that's their goal, is to get to the NBA as soon as they can. And now we really had an awfully good player, I think, drafted that Jeff, I know, really could never get over because of kind of what you talked about was an established star, Dejan Bodiroga.
Uh-huh.
And Bodiroga, I think, was going to be really good, you know, a better version of Ricky Rubio, a bigger, better version of that, in my opinion, because he could score better. But, you know, he just, the time he was drafted by the Kings, he was, I think, about 28 or 9 years old. And, you know, and had seen some European guys struggle. Mm-hmm. And he was a major star and making major money. And so he never did come over. And I always thought that, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, looking back, had he come over, you know, at the time, you know, I think he could have had an awfully good career. I'm confident of that. So it depends, you know, like I said, with Vezinikov, I don't think it's automatic. He feels like he has to come, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, he's going to make a lot of money there if he stays. He knows he's a star. He's comfortable in the league. You know, he knows he's not going to be an NBA all-star likely. So, yeah, I think it gets a little different as they get established, you know. Like, say, with Luka and those guys, well, Luka, you know, his whole goal was, you know, he was already the best player in Europe when he was 18 years old. So, you know, I mean, he was kind of LeBron James of Europe.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's interesting, too, with Vezinkov. I mean, he's picked up, like, MVP trophies everywhere, like, nonstop. And I think he finished the season with 3 different MVP trophies. And like he's a really, really interesting prospect, especially for a guy who, you know, he got better the last 2 years. It's not like this is who he was for the last, I mean, he's been a pro since he's like 15, and he got really good at 25. And so it's kind of interesting to watch the growth of a player from afar and then see how he can possibly fit into what you're doing. I want to, before we get out of here, I want to hit you up about, like, you've been part of a major draft process. And, you know, for my entire career covering the team, the Kings are always in the lottery, you know, since 2007 all the way until, I think the only year they didn't have a first round pick was 2019 when they had traded it. But this is one of those years where you're not drafting in the lottery. And how is it different for you to draft in the lottery versus drafting around number 24? And I think the funny thing is in 1990, you had the one draft where you drafted everywhere. You drafted it at 7, you drafted at 14, you drafted at 18, you drafted at 23. But how do you approach each of the different areas of the draft? And do you look at them differently or is it all the same?
Well, I'll say this, it's way easier to draft lower down. You know, the expectations aren't nearly as much. You know, the risks aren't nearly as much. And, you know, and I say, just looking back to some of those drafts, late drafts, you know, Gerald Wallace was a late first round, Kevin Martin, Francisco Garcia, Hito Turkoglu was 16th. So there's, you know, and then, you know, we got some really good players in the second round. I think Darius Sangala and Randy Brown, Benny Del Negro. I think it's, to answer your question, I mean, once you're down there, you're just looking for the best guy. I mean, that you think you're hoping, you know, that will have value to you and the NBA both. And when you, to me, and there's always guys like that. I mean, obviously you look at the best players in the league now. I mean, Jokic and Jimmy Butler, Jimmy was a 30th pick and Jokic was 41st pick. So, I don't, you know, I mean, you don't have to look very far to find out, yes, there's gold. You know, there's always gold out there. You just, the lower you pick, maybe it's been picked over a little more, but, as we know, with the draft, so many of the top 10 players every year, a certain percentage fail.
Yeah.
You know, they just do. and they're not sure things. You know, I mean, we're pretty sure Wembanyama is going to be a sure thing, barring injuries. But I'm not. I mean, whether you know whether Scoot Henderson will be a sure thing or not, I'm not as convinced. I have no reason to think he won't be. But you know, there's been other small, quick, powerful guards that couldn't shoot well that that didn't really carve out a great niche. You know.
Yeah.
So it's that. But I guess the real question is, yeah, it's easier overall because you're looking at a lot of guys, and all you're looking for is a guy you hope can make your roster and be an NBA player at some point. You know, it's like a Kevin Martin took a couple of years because the team was so good, and Gerald Wallace, who was a terrific prospect, but they just couldn't protect him in expansion draft. Who went on to be an all-star. And so those were, you know, just as some of the lottery picks were total misses, some of those guys were total hits. It's like Hedo, 16th in that draft, he would have been a top three or four guy if you redid it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Pagia was 15th, you know, 14th. Yeah. And Steve Nash was 15th in that draft.
And Kobe Bryant was 13th.
13th. Yeah. Three of the four best players went 13, 14, and 15 in that draft.
Yeah, that might be the best 13, 14, 15 of all time. Like pretty impressive. All right. Well, first of all, I love having you on. It's been a long time since we've been able to catch up a little bit. I'm glad to see everything's going well. You look healthy. Do you miss it? Do you miss being there every night?
No. It was time for me. And I knew my mind, my recollections. I used to be pretty good on trivia and remembering names, places, things. And as far as the NBA is concerned, I felt like I was about as good as anybody. And I knew that last year or so. It was definitely, there was a drop, and there still is. I mean, I'll say I get a kick out of it. I can remember things from 30 years ago way better than I can remember stuff from yesterday or 5 days ago. So no, it was, you know, it was time for me. I like being a fan, you know, I'm really a Kings fan, but truthfully, I'm probably more of an NBA fan. I'm more of a basketball fan.
Yeah.
I like the game, you know, and I guess that goes back to my background because, you know, when you've been at different places, you're a fan of those teams, but then, you know, but overall you're the fan of the game more. And so that hasn't changed. And so I still really pull for the Kings and watch a lot of other teams that really I enjoy watching.
You showed up at a game and I was able to drop by and see you. One of your friends took you to a game this season.
Yeah.
But was it good to see the fans get to be back, you know, to find the love of the game again, because it felt like Sacramento had lost the love of the game a little bit. And it felt like this season it recaptured it.
Oh yeah. You know, it was, and it was really great to get out there. I mean, my friend Maury Gloucester's, you know, been at me all year. And I said, well, I really enjoy watching them on TV and, you know, just I'm different. Things are different. I didn't know how comfortable it'd be to be back. But, you know, I said, if it's an afternoon game, I'll give it a go. And it was, but like you said, it was great. It's great to see some fans. I was surprised that, you know, that they remembered who I was or, you know, not that it was a big deal. I mean, it's everybody has their time. And, you know, I know I've had mine, but I'm just really happy for the fans to get a team they deserve, you know, because this fan base is, you know, not being treated well overall, you know, had some great teams and some terrible teams. But this last stint of 16 straight years, man, hope that never happens again to anybody.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't think any fan base ever deserves to go through what Kings fans just went
well,
through.
Except the Lakers.
Except for the Lakers. That's fine. Okay. But it'll be okay because they'll think that Victor Wembanyama is coming any day he's just going to leave wherever he's at and join them with Giannis and everyone else. They'll believe that the whole time because they're delusional Lakers fans. So it's okay.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And all these, like the Knicks and the Lakers, assume every player is the number one choice in life is to go play for one of those teams. You know,
of course.
I get so depressed with that, but you know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? All right. Well, that is the incredible Jerry Reynolds. Jerry, just so you know, there's never going to be a time where Kings fans don't know who you are. And that time has passed you by. It has not passed you by. You're still sharp as a tack. And I love having you on. And I miss hanging out with you all the time at the arena and our drives to the Bay Area. Although I don't miss the drives to the Bay Area at all. I just miss hanging out with you.
The only thing good about those was visiting with you. We're talking hoops all the way. That was it.
That and our stops at Wendy's.
And our stop at Wendy's. Yeah. So,
that's right.
Yeah. No, I do miss. That's what I miss as much as anything. Yeah. Is, you know, press room and people, you know, ushers, people that I got to know, you know, and of course coaches around the league and things. So I miss that more than having a job, you know. I mean, it, like say, it was a time for me, and you can say I'm sharp as a tack, and I might be an old dull tack, but a tack.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Kings Beat podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Reynolds for joining the show. We'll be back with another show very soon with Sean and Brendan. Thanks for dropping by and seeing us.
Thank you, James.